You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
It's Tuesday. That means it's time once again to join Grandpa Lampshade here in the Church of the Lampshade. Thank you for joining us this week, folks. Episode installment number 14 of the Church of the Lampshade show, and things are just rocking right along. Glad you could join us this week. As always, a special shout out as a thank you for those who continue to support what we're trying to do here. Three of y'all with support this week, and also in addition, I've got a couple of folks who have switched to monthly support. As always, very much appreciated. If you want in on that, all that information, I'm not going to sit here and rattle it off. It's all at the bottom of the description page. And yeah, very much appreciated. Get in there and pay those tithes. You get it. Don't make me do a pay your tithes sermon, because nobody likes those. Anyway, information how you can do. We got snail mail. We've got Bitcoin. If you're sitting on another type of cryptocurrency, let me know. I can probably more than likely get you an address if you want to send something else, such as Litecoin or something like that. We should be able to get you hooked up. Anyway, yeah, as always, very much appreciated. Thank you for joining us. We've got plenty to visit about. And by the way, if you're missing the Friday installments of the Daily Nationalist on Radio Air, and you're missing your second shot of the Lampshade because you join Sven Longshanks on every Friday on the Daily National show, or as I like to call it, Clown World in Review. So if you've been missing out on that, it's a lot of fun. Short show, generally runs about 30 minutes. And again, it's always a really great discussion, and it's always a real pleasure to get to sit down and do shows with Sven. It reminds me of the old days, and it's a lot of fun, and you're missing out if you're not catching those. So be sure and catch the Friday installments of the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks and myself as we go through the news. So yeah, it's Tuesday already, and as always is the case, we are not lacking in things to visit about, which we always do before we get into the main part of our sermon. We're going to try to continue our Meaning of Life series as we go through the book of Ecclesiastes this week, and we'll probably try to get to a few other things as well, kind of cram it all in there. So yeah, action-packed, fun-filled. Well, I don't know, we're not doing a lot of action, but a lot of topic-filled, and ought to be a great discussion on this week's show. So glad you're here. Get comfy, pour up your coffee, whatever, get cozy as we continue on through the Church of the Lampshade show. For our opening lulls this week, as I've, of course, have this past week made my way through the intellectual wasteland, which is known as Gab. Life is hard. Life is hard for the Reverend Lampshade. And it's funny how things, you know, it's the same patterns. You see the same patterns. I saw somebody put up this retarded, because it's Gab, so it was, you know, some retarded meme post about, you know, Israel and you know, because God's going to bless us. We got to stand with Israel here in the end times because Jesus wants us to. Because, you know, the modern state of Israel has the same name as what's mentioned in the Bible. So, of course, you know, it's got to be the same thing. It's got to be the same thing. And I was just unable to avoid rebuking this person for, you know, I asked him basically, you know, so if I changed my name to Israel, would I get special treatment as well, you know, among other things? And there, of course, Zio-Con response was, they told me, they said, I think you have a demon. I think you have demons. You should find a ministry that can work on casting those demons out. And my response was, you know, it's really funny because when Jesus was walking around the face of the earth, he got accused of the same thing. And just like you, the people at the time were just sure they were right. And now they're in hell. Lulz. So yeah, more things change, more they say the same. People are so convinced that they just know these Ziocons. It just seems like, of course, there's always a high level of retardation and a low level of actual intellectual content on Gab. So we deal with a lot of this, and that, like I say, this past week's theme has been Ziocons. It just seems like there's been a ton of these modern church cuck Zionist people posting their horrible memes about, you know, Israel and such, and how, you know, we should basically be subservient to Israel because that's what God wants us to do. We're going to point to our one line. I think these people only know one line of scripture, by the way, and it's the one from the Old Testament about I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, because surely God was talking about this modern created state that happens to have the same name. It has to be what he was looking forward to when he said that. It's amazing to me that there's actually so many people that are like, I mean, I'd love to bring myself to believe that these people aren't real, that they're just like, I don't know, maybe they're like, Israel pays them to post this retarded shit on the internet, and there may be something like that, you know, but I mean, we have to get real. I mean, there's a lot of people that really actually believe this nonsense. It's sad because I get beyond frustrated with these people, but I always have to remind myself that on some level or another, they at some point they wanted to seek out God, they wanted to know Jesus, and somewhere they got sidetracked into this other nonsense. Somebody was brought up the other day to me, you know, how in the book of Revelation, they talk about how if you don't have the mark of the beast, you know, you can't buy, you can't sell, you know, you basically can't have a job. And they pointed out how this rhymes with the fact, you know, of where we are. And I think it's funny, I guess, I don't know, I'm not trying to get into a sermon early, but this is just kind of wherever the discussion leads us. And I think it is. It is a really relevant point and something worth reflecting on. You know, what is the mark of the beast? Well, we know that Satan is the father of lies. So you've got to go along with the lie. Well, what's the opposite of that? Speaking the truth. And what happens to truth tellers in this modern world? You lose your job. There's people having their bank account shut down. You can forget PayPal. You can't process. You can't. You get deplatformed. You can't monetize your content and make a living speaking the truth. You get shut down. And the truth tellers are shut down. They're not allowed to buy. They're not allowed to sell because they're not allowed to have a job or have money or anything such as this. And it is. It's more than a little ironic. And it's something I think that is. It's worth reflecting on in the idea of, you know, and these people, then you have these people that, you know, Israel, my Jews, you know, and it's like they sit there on the one hand and talk about in the end days, everybody's going to follow and worship the Antichrist, but not me. So who are you worshiping? Israel. But that's not Jesus, Israel. So you understand, you sit here on the one hand and say everyone's going to be doing this, you know, with the assumption not you, but yet you turn around and you're essentially worshiping something not Jesus. And of course, in the midst of all of this, I have the what I like to call the atheist evangelicals have to jump in. You know, there is. I've always said there's nobody more evangelical for their religion than atheists. This is a fact. I mean, I have I really don't have much friction with anybody because Grandpa Lampshade is an easy guy to get along with. But I have very little, like, the pagans, like, I don't know that I've really ever had pagans jump into a topic, you know, unrelated to them and start spurging at me about paganism, you know, because they just don't. I mean, that's their thing, you know, and I don't care, you know, more power to them. But if there's a Christian topic at hand, You can just lay money down that the atheists are going to jump into the middle of it to spurg their religion at me, to spurg their religion at everybody. It's like, yeah, I don't care. You know, it's, to me, it's, it comes across as the ultimate notice me senpai with my atheism spurging. I don't care. You know, I don't care that you think all of this religion stuff is nonsense and you think that we're all a bunch of gullible fools. I don't care. Look, as far as my beliefs, you're going to hell. I don't give a shit. You know, I mean, really, go to hell. What do you want me to do? You want me to come and beg you? No, listen to me. Believe in Jesus and don't go to hell. I don't care. Go to hell. You know, be proud of yourself all the way to hell. I don't give a shit. But they have to come evangelize. I mean, when I'm going through my random shit tier timeline on Gab and I see people posting about atheist stuff, I don't feel the need to interject myself and puke my Christianity out all over your topic. I just look at it and laugh and move on. But for the atheists, by and large, it's not that way. They always have to jump in and make sure that you know that they think you're stupid for your religious beliefs and you're just a bunch of Jew worshippers. One of the stupidest things I see. Is that, you know, Christianity has always been about submitting yourself to the Jews. Really? Really? So all those old Christian nations of Europe that expelled the Jews 109 plus times, I'm sorry, but if your view and understanding of history is your lifetime, and don't be offended because that's the honest truth for most people, their view of history is their lifetime. But I'm sorry, if your view of history is your lifetime, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not your history teacher. I'm not going to sit here and explain to you. Because again, I don't give a shit. You know, go to hell. Good. Go. Get the hell out of here. I don't care. Yes. But it is. It's funny. So I deal with it. I deal with all that going through the intellectual wasteland of Gab between. So this past week, it was like a balancing between dealing with Israel Zyokucks and, you know, the occasional atheist spurging in my feed. That such is the intellectual wasteland that is known as Gab. So I've tried to start like limiting my time on Gab because it is. It's just. It's a mental wasteland. As I said the other day, I suddenly realized I think Gab is like an online internment camp, and we're in it. Yeah, we've got free speech, but good night. Are we paying for it? It's not really free because we're paying for it with shit-tier memes and low intellectual content. I mean, the fashy stuff that's supposed, though, the rest of us that are in the camp, the rest of you probably listening to the show, you know, the stuff we post up is the only thing entertaining on here. And then you have to have, of course, then you have the people that show up, you know, it's like, OMG, I'm here to try Gab out because you wouldn't believe I just got banned from Twitter. Well, 2 years later, welcome to the party. Congratulations. You know, you're not special. The rest of us were kicked off of Twitter long ago, but you know, hey, welcome to the party. Like, yes, I'm going to start posting here on Gab. I'm going to start posting on Gab. I want to check this place out. And then, like clockwork, like 3 days later, well, this is an interesting place and all, but there's a lot of anti-Semitic content on here. I'm all about the free speech, but oh my gosh, I can't find anybody here to have an intellectual conversation with. Okay, well, let's have an intellectual conversation about why, you know, for instance, is the Holocaust real? Let's present some facts. I'm muting you. I'm not even having... This is how it is. This is how it is. And it's a microcosm for our society today. In the last couple of shows, including this one, I've been bashing Gab, you know, because as an intellectual wasteland, and it's probably like, you know, okay, well, what the hell do you keep going back there? It's the only place I could post in public just about except for doing these shows. But it's a microcosm for society today. I mean, when you're on platforms like Twitter or something, you get more of a broader, you know, you get the left and the right. And but when you're on Gab, it's more of a concentrated, a concentrated segment of society. The conservatives, the fake right, the cons, neocons, zyocons, whatever you want to call them. You get it more concentrated. This, you know, I like if you were on some, exclusively far left platform, if that were possible without being banned, which is not, you would get a concentrated snapshot of the left. Well, on Gab, you get a concentrated snapshot of the dead conservative right and boomers. And they're so easy to spot because they act like conservatism is a real thing still. It is. They act like conservatism is actually still a thing. You know, it's like somebody walking around, using like trying to be hip, and obviously, you're not hip, you're old, and they try to use this slang like, oh, the kids are using, only the slang they're using is like from 15 years ago. 15 years ago, and this is from, and I say this as somebody who continues to use Pepe the Frog, and Pepe's like way passe. Yes, I get that, but I love Pepe. I will not give up on Pepe. I will be posting Pepe long after Pepe has been forgotten by others. I have an emotional attachment to Pepe. I'm sorry, but that's just how it is. No, these people, it's like, yeah, they're like, oh yeah, but conservatism is dead, thank goodness. And if they act like it's still a thing. And I was pointing out that I'm like, nobody on the left is afraid of conservatives. Conservatives, when was the last conservative that lost their job for posting their political views on the internet? I don't know of any. I mean, are conservatives allowed to monetize their content? Hello, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, name any of the rest of them. They're allowed to have their content and get rich doing it. Well, if you were threatening the status quo, if you were actually, saying controversial things, they're not going to let you do that. It was kind of like the old saying, if voting, like I believe it was Mark Twain said that if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let you do it. Well, it's the same thing. If these people were actually saying, you're Rush Limbaugh, you're Sean Hannity's, these conservatives, if they were actually saying anything controversial, if they were actually saying anything that was a threat to the status quo, they wouldn't let them say it. It shut them down. They demonetize, they deplatform just like they do us. And I know conservatives feel special now. They always want to, conservatives always want to distance themselves from us. 2-3 years ago, when we were all getting banned off of Twitter, what did they do? They were jumping up and down celebrating because, they didn't want to be associated with the extreme right wing. And now what? 3 years have passed. Now they're getting banned from Twitter and they want everybody to cry river for them when they show up on Gab. Because, oh my gosh, y'all aren't going to believe this. I just got banned from Twitter. Whoa, dude, no way. I just got banned from Twitter. Why? It's for saying the Muslims suck. Oh, well, the only reason they're getting banned off of Twitter now isn't because they're saying such controversial things and boy, they really are getting under the leftist. No, it's just that Facebook and Twitter have just gone so extreme leftoid, so SJW, whatever you want to say it, thought police. I mean, they've already banned all the Nazis. So now, they just work their way down. And given a long enough time frame, they'll start banning shit-lib leftists off of Twitter that aren't shit-lib leftist enough. We always hear from people on the right talking about purity spiraling. We can't be purity spiraling on the right. And that's, then you go over here on the left. The left are purity spiralers, too. I mean, at some point in time, they're going to be banning shit-lib leftists because they're not shit-lib leftist enough. Well, yes, but you had a problem with a transgender person using participating in women's sports. Well, yeah, that's because it's not fair. And I'm about fairness and equality. No. You're a bad thinker. You're a right supremacist Nazi, get over there, out of here, you're banned as well. Long enough time frame, they'll be banning leftists from Twitter and Facebook too if they're not sufficiently good thinkers. That's just the way these places are purity spiraling. They're purity spiraling on the left. But that's the only reason conservatives are even being banned off of Twitter. It's not because anybody gives a shit about what they're saying. It's not like they're a threat to the status quo. Hell, they're one of the pillars that props up the status quo. They serve the role as the fake opposition. And you have these people, and they go around acting like conservatism is a real thing. You can always spot them, too. And again, a lot of this, there's probably a lot of overlap here with this and boomers, you know. But you can always spot them because they still speak in terms of conservative versus liberal, you know, like this is 1985 or some shit, you know. Conservative versus these crazy limp-wristed liberals. There are no, it's just like conservatism is a thing, liberalism isn't a thing. These people on the left, they are not liberals. I'm sorry, I'm old enough. I remember what liberals were. I remember what liberalism was. And these guys ain't it. These guys are just communists. They're just out and out Marxists. I pointed it out before, but it bears worth pointing out again. People on the real right, on the hard right, whatever you want to call us, they call us everything, modern day Nazis, whatever they want to call us. Those of us on the real right, the nationalist right. We have so many names, it's hard to keep up. You almost have to check every week to see what we are this week. But we get thrown off of platforms such as Twitter. And again, I've said this before, I've made this point before, but I think it's something that bears repeating. When we've been purged off of platforms like Facebook and Twitter, a lot of people have this misconception, this idea that they kick us off these platforms because we're offensive, you know, because it scares the leftists and they have to go run to their safe spaces. Well, it does do that to some, the weak-willed leftists, you know, they have to run and hide in their safe spaces. But make no mistake, that's not why they kick us off. They really, that's not why we're banned off of these platforms. They ban us off of these platforms because they're afraid that some of their leftists will start listening to us. I think leftists, I've been down both paths. You know, I've been on Twitter multiple times, you know, and kicked off and back on and kicked off and back on. And so I interacted with leftists there. And now, of course, I'm stuck in the intellectual wasteland that is Gab. And I have to say, all in all, I mean, leftists are easier to reach than these cons, these dinosaur conservative types. They really are. Because, I mean, you might have to wade through 50 leftists that just, they just go off their emotional triggering and they don't listen to you. But, I mean, after like 50, you occasionally find one that's capable of a rational discussion. And you just, once they understand, they understand that once you get past the disagreement over the nonsense of all races are the same. I mean, there, you know, there's some things that we can agree on. I'm anti-big corporation. They're anti-big corporation. There's actually some stuff. And you can, there's been a few times you can actually, we're on the intellectual wasteland of Gab with these conservatives. I mean, they're just, you have to go through 1,000 of them. And then it's even questionable whether you break through. They're just so set in their way. I think a lot of it, too, is age. I think I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would be willing to bet that the age demographic on Gab is probably like 3 times what it is on a platform such as Twitter. And so a lot of that may just be people being set, you know, set in their ways, set in their beliefs is because they're old. You know, and hell, this is coming from somebody who's getting up in years myself. But I've all, you know, somebody said the other day, Grandpa Lampshade is an enigma. You know, yeah, because even as I get older, I'm still willing, you know, to adjust my views if presented with new factual information. That's not how most people work. Most people, the older they get, the more concrete, more set in their ways they are. And you just cannot reach them. I don't know. I guess the vast majority of people really are not able to just process information and consider the information. They always have to, I don't know, like be emotionally invested in a position that they are going to by golly, defend to the end, no matter what kind of information you present to them. And it's funny because so many of these people, LARP is just the opposite. You know, it's being intellectually, I'm a conservative. I'm intellectually superior to these frail, safe space needing leftists. They sit here and mock these leftists because they just need a safe space. Okay, good. I'm glad that you're an intellectually superior conservative. Now, let's discuss, you know, what aspects of the Holocaust are real and which are not. Whoa, 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 whoa. Where are you going with this? A gnome Holocaust is real. No, Holocaust is real. Because of what? The pile of old shoes. I mean, you know, 6 million bodies. That's a big pile. Well, they burned them up in these ovens that are like the size of pizza ovens. You could fit one body in there, and they were using wood. I mean, I've seen the mathematical equation. It's not possible. So, yeah, then that's... No, shut up! Get out of here! I'm muting you. That's always... I find it so funny. The conservatives sit here and mock the leftists for needing these safe space. These millennial. And there's another trigger word, or rather not a trigger word. There's another like red flag word, you know, that these people identify themselves with. And that's the word snowflake. These snowflakes. That and cupcake. This is their two favorite. Oh my gosh. This is their two favorite words they love to use to posture as being like superior to the leftist. Cupcake and snowflake. Oh, let me tell you, cupcake. These snowflakes have to just run to their safe space. Hey, well, let's have an intellectual discussion. We're going to discuss. I'm going to bring my facts about what aspects of the Holocaust I don't think are real. And you try to refute them. I'm muting you. Well, isn't that the equivalent of running to your safe space? You having to mute somebody who's simply presenting facts to you. I understand if somebody's just putting retarded shit in your timeline over and over and spamming you. I understand muting that. Nobody has time for that. But when you have somebody saying, okay, well, hey, look, I've got these facts here. What do you think about this? You know, don't you think this could change your... I'm muting you. Well, then you're running to your safe space. Cupcake, let me tell you, you're not going to tell me anything about the Holocaust that I don't already know. Well, they can't. It's not physically possible to have a gas chamber with a wooden door. I mean, the gas chambers have to be airtight, and you have to be able to evacuate the gas out without killing the people working at the prison. And you know, this is just, these shower room gas chambers are just not physically possible. I mean, it's just not by the nature of physics. You would wind up gassing all of the camp workers. Sorry, Hans, you get gas chamber duty today. Oh, shit. You know, I'm going to get gassed right along with the prisoners, you know, because we're showering them off in these shower rooms with wooden doors. Shut up. I'm going to mute you. Off to your safe space. Let me tell you, cupcake. Oh, jeez. But they do. They mock the leftists as having to run to us, being snowflakes, quote unquote, and having to run to their safe spaces. And as soon as you present evidence, facts to these people that they're not willing to listen to, they do the exact same thing. They mute you. They run to their safe space. They don't want to hear it. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about conservatives. Conservatives are not a threat to anybody. Conservatives are part of what helps prop up the status quo. Again, if conservatism was a threat to the status quo, they would deplatform you. They would shut you down. They'd demonetize you. They would demonize you. And they would attack you like they do us on the real right, on the nationalist right. As I sit around and watch, you know, America collapsing, and it is, it's collapsing. More and more people are starting to notice it, by the way. Not the conservatives. They still think that they're going to jump through a time warp and it's going to be 1776 again. That's and that, even that in and of itself is nonsense. You know, they'll sit there and go, well, you Nazis, you think that Hitler's going to come back from the dead? And no, not really. We don't. No, none of us here on the right, we don't think that we're going to recreate 1930s Germany. We realize this isn't Germany in the 30s. We get that. You're a bunch of delusional idiots. Okay, well, what's your view? We need to get back to 1776. Wasn't that further back in time? Okay, let's get back to the original content of the original views of the Founding Fathers. So now blacks aren't real humans. Women damn sure aren't going to vote. In fact, the only people who are going to vote are going to be white male property owners. Let's do this shit.
Whoa, that's a little extreme. Maybe not 1776. Let's see here. Let's move it up to the 1800s. Well, you still don't have women voting. And let's move it up. And they keep moving right up until they're right back where they're at today.
That's conservatism in a nutshell. They don't really want to. They do all their shit tear memes about my constitution getting back to the beliefs of the Founding Fathers. Well, these were the beliefs of the Founding Fathers. Oh, that's too extreme. Okay, then what are you for? And they just start inching back from 17. They time warped to 1776, but that was too extreme. So they go into the 1800s. Well, at least blacks can vote now, because we wouldn't want to be racist. We're not Nazis. You know, okay, all right, well, good. Well, women can't vote at least. Oh, that's too extreme, too. I mean, I wouldn't want to be against gender equality. Well, of course not. You're a conservative. Let me time warp further here to allow women to vote. Okay, good. All right, well, now you've given women the right to vote. Well, at least we still don't have the bullshit Civil Rights Act. People can, because I know conservatives are all about my private property rights and, businesses being able to, serve whatever customers they choose. So at least, even though you've moved from 1776, you've moved up here now. You're in, say, we'll say 1930. You're now in 1930. So at least businesses can continue to segregate. Businesses can say, well, we're not going to serve black people. No, my gosh, no, my based conservative Martin Luther King. We're going to have to time warp up further here past the Civil Rights Act. So now you've time warped from 1776 now past the Civil Rights Act, because Martin Luther King was a real conservative. And that's conservatism in a nutshell. If they could time warp, you would see how useless conservatism is. They start at 1776 and now they're up past the Civil Rights Act, because they've got to support that too. Conservatives, their views, their quote-unquote beliefs, they change as they're dictated by the left. I mean, look at them today. The big focus is illegal immigration. They accept the fundamental starting place, the foundation, the starting point. They accept the starting point from the left that we have to have immigration. The country has to have immigration. Hey, forget asking them why. Why do we have to have any immigration? I mean, what's wrong with what we would? It's like we would just stagnate. What do you mean we would stagnate? What the hell does that even mean? How do we not have enough people in the country as it is? We got to have immigration. So they always start from that point. We've got to have immigration. The point set by the leftists. We have to have immigration. They just want to dicker on the illegal part. And even that, I mean, at some point in time, given enough timeline, the conservatives would cuck on that as well. Well, some illegal immigration is okay. Trump coming out with his thing here, his immigration plan, which was, we're going to have merit-based legal immigration. And everybody celebrates this. They're like, oh, this is, look at Trump. We're not going to have these low-level bean people coming across the border. No, we're going to have higher quality immigrants come into the country. You do realize by merit-based, he means people that are going to compete for your job, right? You enjoying your job where you work at a computer at this company and the pay is decent. He's talking about bringing in competition for your job. You see, when there were still manual labor jobs that, regular, like working class white people could do, that blacks could do in this country. Well, we need more people because we have to keep wages suppressed. So they bring all these people from south of the border to compete for those jobs at a lower wage. And then they force out the working class white people. They force out the blacks that could have took those jobs. And they fill them with these people because they'll work cheaper. When Trump talks about we're in a merit-based legal immigration, now he's talking about moving it up. We're going to be bringing in visa holders from places such as India to take your higher paying tech jobs. It's already happening. He's talking about doing more of it. You see, when you had your nice office job on a computer, it's just like when the quote unquote Nazis were getting banned off Twitter and conservatives didn't give a shit because hope we're not those guys. When working class white people or even blacks were losing manual labor jobs, you were like, that's what they get for being stupid. It doesn't affect me. I've got a white collar job. I sit here at this computer. I'm doing these jobs. Hey, I've got a good job. I've got a job with a pension and a retirement. And well, guess what? Now they're going to do the same thing for you. They're going to bring in this. They're bringing these foreigners to compete for your jobs. And people are celebrating. These cons are celebrating. These MAGAtards that worship Trump. Look, I've said it before. I'll say it again. When Trump does something good, I applaud it. Good. That's good. We take what wins we can get. But I'm not going to sit here and worship the man. When the man does something that's bullshit, I'm calling out the bullshit. And this is bullshit. You can't sit there and say, when Trump says he's a nationalist and not a globalist, what the hell do you call bringing people in, these visa holders? You're going to issue visas to these people to come in and take people's higher paying tech jobs. They've already washed. They've washed the American population. They've washed the population out of the manual labor jobs now. Manufacturing's going away. You say, well, when Obama was talking about his jobs program, we're going to build the infrastructure. We're going to do these highway plans. We're going to do all this. This is going to put Americans to work. And then you go, they put these signs up, putting America to work or whatever the hell the Obama signs were, you know, on these interstate construction projects. This is a part of Obama's plan to put America to work. And you drive through there and there's all these people literally from Mexico doing all of the work. And it's like, well, it didn't really put Americans to work. It put people from Mexico to work. Trump's talking, and other conservatives mocked Obama for that. And Trump's doing the same thing. Trump's going to do the same thing for your office job. Trump's going to do the same thing for your tech job. He's going to bring in, he's talking about issuing these visas to these people from foreign countries so they can come in, compete at a lower wage that you are not willing to take, and push you out of your job. Hardcore conservatives, my free market, that's just the right, my free market, I ain't no damn communist. Then where does your free market extend to? Because you can have a free market in a nation, but if you're going to extend your free market principles to the entire world, guess what? That's going to bring your nation down to the mean, to the lowest common denominator. If you're going to force your native population to compete in wages against people from a country where they're willing to work for a third of what you are, because you want to sustain that's the thing. You take somebody from a foreign country and their standard of living is so shitty that they can come here and still have a shitty standard of living, but it's an improvement. So you're used to having this standard of living here in America, and now you don't want to downgrade. Well, these people, it's an upgrade for them. So even if they're living a shitty standard of living compared to what we consider a good standard of living, it's still an upgrade for them. But free market. So your free market extends to the whole world. Well, what do you know? Conservatives cucking again. It's amazing. Trump talks about merit-based legal immigration, and it's the same song and dance, people. It's the same song and dance they were doing back in the 90s for people that had manufacturing jobs. Back in the 90s, man, if you get a job at GM on the assembly line, dude, you were set for life. You know, all you had to do was put the parts on the car, zip it on with the air wrench, send it down the line, and you made good money. You made a good living. And the conservatives act like there was something wrong with that because why? My corporate profits weren't high enough.
If corporate profits go up, then it's my free market. But if wages go up, that's some sort of communism. The workers can't dare benefit. You can see why in a lot of aspects, it's in a lot of ways, we're more of a threat in reaching leftists. That's why we get kicked off of these platforms. We start talking about things like this, and if a leftist can sit here and hear this, they're like, yeah, they're right. I agree with this. They're right. Big corporations piss on them. You know, what about the workers? What about the workers having a decent standard of living? Maybe these right-wing, quote-unquote, Nazis aren't so wrong after all. Get them off of this platform. We can't have them. We can't have them poisoning the stew here. But these people, they worship Trump. You know, they worship Trump. They can't disagree with anything he says, even though he's openly calling for, you know, if you logically look at the policy he's proposing on immigration, he's talking about screwing them over out of their very own jobs. And they sit there and they support it. Why? Because it's legal immigration. The problem is the illegal immigration. No, the problem is the people that live here need to make a decent living. And you're talking about suppressing their wages for the benefit of big corporation, but that's the conservative way. It's always been the conservative way. We got to get into this week's sermon. I've run long here, and I did a little bit of preaching at the very opening of the show, which I don't normally do, so we can kind of chalk that up. So get on in here. We're going to fill those pews. We're going to get into our sermon this week here in the Church of Lampshade, the heart of the show, and we're going to continue on with our Meaning of Life series from the book of Ecclesiastes. As we kind of skipped that last week, we got into something else, and that's kind of how it's going to go. But we're going to continue our Meaning of Life series in the book of Ecclesiastes this week. So yeah, get on in here. We're going to be starting in chapter 5. Once again, we're using the New International Version because we're covering a lot more ground. Normally, we're just doing a few verses of scripture, and I like to use the King James Version for that. But we're kind of covering, since we're doing the whole book of Ecclesiastes, obviously not in one sitting, but we're doing the whole book of Ecclesiastes, and I'm familiar enough with both translations. I'm confident we can use the NIV version, and it's going to be easier to move along. I won't have to explain as much, you know, going through the translations. So I'm confident we can still get to our points here. So we've done chapters 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. So we're going to be picking up in chapter 5. And I've had several people already say, well, the messages we've already covered so far, isn't it sort of like hedonism, you know, kind of live in the moment? And as we go through the lessons, this will all become, as we go through the book, it will all become clearer. It's all about the theme. The theme in Ecclesiastes is all about moderation. It's all about not being to the extremes of trying. It'll make sense. Trust me, it'll make sense. And no, it's not about not standing for anything. It's not about not having principles. And it's also not about just being hedonistic and living for right now. So as we go through this, it will become clear. So just bear with it. We're going to be picking up in chapter 5. And as we go through this, again, you need to remember, because we tend to conflate, because there's a lot of times they talk here in the book of Ecclesiastes about evil. You know, you'll see time and time again, theme here is, I've seen a great evil under the sun. And we tend to conflate in our minds the term evil and wicked. And they're not one and the same, because evil, to put it in the best context I can, something evil is just something bad happening. I mean, if you were driving along and you got in a car wreck and were injured, that would be an evil thing. I mean, it's not wicked. I mean, the car wreck itself is not wicked. It's an evil thing, where somebody that like goes around and kidnaps somebody and rapes them to death, I mean, that's a wickedness. So as they go through here and talk about an evil under the sun, I mean, you have to understand what those terms mean in the context. Let's get rocking here. Chapter 5. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know what they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth. So let your words be few. As a dream comes when there are many cares, so the speech of a fool when there are many words. You can see why I love the book of Ecclesiastes. It's just right here. There's just so much wisdom here. When you've got a lot of trouble on your heart, you've got a lot of things, and you try to pray,
You know, your tendency is going to be to sit there and just blah, 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 on and on and on and on and on. God is in heaven. You're on earth. God already knows. I catch myself. I know you do it because I do it. I catch myself all the time. Especially, again, the more troubling the times are and the more there are things weighing on your heart, on my heart. The more this happens, the more I will catch myself. I'm just sitting here and I stop and I realize I'm asking myself, it's like, what am I doing here? I mean, are you explaining to God? When you catch yourself, especially if you're in a trying time and your faith is being tried, and you will catch yourself, I guarantee you will, because we all do it. You're going to catch yourself praying and praying and praying and praying and praying and stop and ask yourself, what are you doing? Because more than likely, when you boil it down to it, you're really trying to make God understand your situation. You're trying to make him get where you're coming from. He already knows. You're not going to explain anything to God. And what they're warning about here is the more you run your mouth, the more likely you are to sin. And not intentionally, but more than likely you are to wind up saying something you shouldn't. And God's understanding, he's forgiving. He knows your motivations, you know, but understand you're not going to explain anything to him. And once you slip into the mindset of you're explaining your situation to God, then you're bringing God down mentally to yourself. It's not possible to actually literally bring him down, but you're lowering God's position as far as the respect you should be giving. He already knows. He knows your situation. You're not going to explain it to him. It's fine to pray and express yourself and you know, God, you know, I just don't understand what's happening. Help me to understand, blah, 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 however you want to phrase it. But understand this, the longer you go on, the more pointless what you're saying is. He already knows. You're not going to explain anything. It's fine. You want to request, God, help me, whatever. But he already knows. You're not explaining anything to him. When you make a vow to God, do not delay in fulfilling it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to vow than to make a vow and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, stand in awe of God. Next time you're in prayer, just try worshiping for a change. Shut up and listen. I'm not saying you're going to hear God's voice like come booming down from heaven, but just try to listen. Just set your heart as though you're trying to hear what God has to say. Don't worry about if you actually hear anything. That's almost irrelevant to what we're saying. Just worship. Just worship him. Continuing on here, if you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Is this so funny? Again, nothing new under the sun. It's like the people serve as livestock to make everybody else wealthy. They siphon off of, even the king himself profits from the fields. When you hear these Democrats and they talk about, we're going to somehow make the poorer people wealthy by taxing the corporate, they're not. They're going to take the money for themselves. They're all just fighting over who's going to get the money. They don't care about us. They don't care about the working people. They don't care about the regular. They're just all fighting over who's going to have their hand in the pot. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless, as we've already covered. Again, the fool sits there and does nothing. and ruins himself. This was in chapter 4, which we covered a couple of weeks ago. But the fool ruins himself. If you think about the stereotype of the millennial generation, because it's funny, the boomers get all offended when we talk about boomers. You know, you're stereotyping us. But then they turn around and they love to run down the millennial generation. It's, you know, laying on their mom's couch. So you look at the stereotype of the millennial generation of, you know, what, somebody that's like pushing 30 years old now or whatever. And they just live on their parents' couch, playing video games, eating Cheetos, and smoking weed all day. That's it. The fool folds his hand and ruins himself. But then on the flip side of that, you have those that just, it's never enough. You know, and again, back in chapter 4, you know, the fool folds his hand, ruins himself, but also better one handful of peace than two handfuls in chasing after the wind. Because there are those who, you look at these people like, say, Warren Buffett or George Soros, and it's never enough. You've got these old men. I mean, how long do you think you're going to live? And they're billionaires. They have more money than they could ever spend. They have more money than their kids could ever spend. And it doesn't matter. It's just more, more, more. If they can cheat the waitress out of a $5 tip, they will. You know, just more. It's never enough. They got to have more, 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 more money, more money. And now they're old. I mean, myself, if I had enough money that I knew I had more than I could ever spend, more than my kids could ever spend, I mean, I'm just going to enjoy life. I'm kicking it for the rest of my life. I'm not going to just keep on chasing after more and more money. I mean, how much is enough? You can only spend so much. And there's no value in the money itself. The only value it holds is what you can get for it. And you want to be able to enjoy life. That's the whole point. But as we're told here, those who love money, it's never enough. Those who love wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless because in the end, we're all going in the box. As all ends the same, we're all going to die. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. You know, when you don't have money, all you think about, you know, well, I won the lottery. You know, we always do that. You know, if I won the lottery, I'd build my Nazi empire. Whatever you imagine that you would do, because you don't. You don't have money, but you work. You do. You, as long as your bills are paid and you're getting by okay, you go to bed at night and think about what you're going to do tomorrow, and you more or less rest easy. But for people that are consumed with greed, consumed with the acquisition of more and more and more wealth, all they think about, the person that is sit there and they have billions of dollars and they worry about giving the waitress too much of a tip. You know, their money keeps them up at night. They're worried that somebody is going to try to get their money. That's all they think about. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when he has a son, there's nothing left for him. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. This too is a grievous evil. As a man comes, so he departs. And what does he gain since he toils for the wind? All his days he eats in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. We always think about, man, if I had money, you know, if I had money. But you look at the flip side of that, those who do, they do all this. They chase after wealth their whole life. They do all this. They're consumed by their greed. They're consumed by their need for wealth. Well, I got to have more. I've got $1 billion. Now, that's not enough. Millionaire, that's 30 years ago. You've got to be at least a billionaire for your life to have any meaning. You're going out in the box. You can't carry anything with you. No matter what you create, no matter what you build, you're not taking any of it with you. Let's continue on here. Then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of heart. It's a blessing to be able to just be satisfied. Just be satisfied. Don't sit there. You really realize what a gift this is. Sit around and actually contemplate the fact that you're going to be dead. And the older it is, the older you get, the more the easier this becomes. But even if you're a young person, you know, you're going to be dead. And think about it. You are living. Just look around. Look around. You're seeing things with your eyes. You can smell things. You can hear things. You are alive right now in this moment. This is an amazing thing. You are alive. You see things. You can think about these things, and you can contemplate things. The day is coming. You're no longer going to be able to do that. You will be gone. It is coming. It's a guaranteed. There's few guarantees in this life. The fact that you're going to die is one of them. You are going to be gone. And then you're not, then you won't, nothing. No trouble, but no good things either. You're not going to be able to think about anything. You're not going to be able to see anything. You're not going to be able to enjoy anything as simple as smelling the wildflowers on a spring day. It all ends the same. It's a gift from God when you're able to just go through your life. And not just be preoccupied with the fact that your days are numbered and you don't know how many you have. Let's go ahead and get into chapter 6. It's a fairly short chapter, and that way we can kind of keep it. We've been doing this series trying to do two chapters at a lick. So we're going to kind of try to stay with that format so that I won't get screwed up and start going over ground that we've already gone over. So as we move into chapter 6, I've seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavily on men. God gives a man wealth, possessions, and honor so that he lacks nothing his heart desires, but God does not enable him to enjoy them, and a stranger enjoys them instead. This is meaningless, a grievous evil. A man may have 100 children and live many years, yet no matter how long he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. It comes without meaning. It departs in darkness, and in darkness its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has more rest than does that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, but fails to enjoy his prosperity, do not all go to the same place? All man's efforts are for his mouth, yet his appetite is never satisfied. What advantage has a wise man over a fool? What does a poor man gain by knowing how to conduct himself before others? Better what the eye sees than the roving of the appetite. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Whatever exists has already been named, and what man has been known. So no man can contend with one who is stronger than he. The more the words, the less the meaning. And how does that profit anyone? I love the more the words, the less the meaning. And how does this profit anyone? This reflects back on what we already covered earlier about, again, like in your prayers where you're just blabbering on. But see, it even works in your interaction with other people. The more somebody just goes on and on, you ever notice you can usually spot when somebody's bullshitting you because they don't ever shut up. They're just on and on and on. You know, you have somebody in your life and you're talking to them and they just on and on. And then at some point in time, the longer they go on, the more you realize, you know, they're just bullshitting you. You know, where somebody that comes to you and gets right to the point, you know, well, okay. You know, so the more the words, the fewer the meaning. The longer somebody rambles on to you, the more likely it is that they're just bullshitting you. You know, where somebody who's quick and to the point and moves on after making their point, there's going to be greater meaning in what they say because they got right to the point. They're not trying to beat around the bush. They're not, you know, just yanking your chain here. They get straight to the point where somebody that just goes on and on and on and on and on. You know, I say that and I laugh because I'm going on and on in this show because that's we got a lot of ground to cover in an hour's time. It has to last you a week. So we have to cram it all in. So let's go ahead and finish out here in chapter 6. For who knows what is good for a man in life? During the few and meaningless days, he passes through like a shadow. Who can tell him what will happen under the sun after he is gone? One of the things I notice is when people talk about like the collapse of the current system, and people start proposing ideas for a new system. We got to replace this system with something else. And people get this idea that you can't even consider any form of, say, a replacement style of government unless it's going to last forever. Yeah. You say, well, I think, you know, we could have a system such as this, you know, say for instance, based on National Socialist principles. And you have somebody say, well, that couldn't last because eventually this would happen. Look, you're going to be dead by then. You come up with the best thing you can now. Nobody can tell you what's going to happen after you're dead and gone. A meteorite could strike the earth and everybody could be dead for all you know. Nobody can tell you. You're not going to know what happens after you're gone. Imagine if the founding fathers of America could look up and see what this nation became today. They'd just burn the whole thing down and say to hell with it.
But obviously they don't.
Because they don't know. They don't know what happened after they're gone. They're dead now. They're dead. And you're not going to know what's going to happen after you're gone. You come up with the best ideas you can now. You come up with the best ideas that you can now. The next generation will have to work that stuff out for themselves. You do the best you can now. You don't want to be self-centered and just, well, they, you know, it profits me now and, you know, nothing to my kids, to hell with them. No, but you have to understand that after you're gone, you have to deal with your problems now. The problems facing you, whether it's as an individual or as a nation or as a people, as a race, whatever. You have to deal with that now. The next generation, they'll have to deal with their own version of these very same problems. Because again, there's nothing new under the sun. Nobody can tell you what's going to happen after you're dead and gone. I mean, getting all caught up in what's going to happen after you're dead and gone is meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. You're not going to be here. You don't know. You don't know how it's going to play. You don't know how your life is going to play out tomorrow. Hell, you may be going out to eat tonight, get hit by a big truck, and you're going to be dead. All the things that you're worried about right now, doesn't it seem silly? You're ate up right now. You're worried about whatever it is. How are you going to pay for this? Or how's this? You got this project at your job, and you're not sure you're going to be able to finish it by the deadline, and it's just eating you up, and it's so important. If you go out tonight and get hit by a big truck and you are dead, then all of that worry, all of that being consumed about being worried about that project at work or what that person said to you, it's meaningless. It's irrelevant because it's stupid. You're the only one worried about it. Although the people telling you it's important, yeah, you know, that's because it benefits them. But in the end, if you die tonight, all your worry accomplished nothing. It was a chasing after the wind. You didn't get anything. It's not that big a deal. It's not going to affect the outcome because once your days run out, once your clock and everybody's got a stopwatch, you know, timing you down, there's a timer on your life and it's running down and you don't get to see the timer and it's running down. And once that sumbitch hits zero, once it hits zero, you're done. You don't get one more second. Once that thing hits zero, nobody's going to reset that clock for you. You're not even going to get another hour. You're not going to get another minute. Once it hits zero, whether you're 90 years old and pass in your sleep quietly, or whether you walk out that door today, get struck by lightning or hit by a car or whatever the case may be, fall off your lawnmower mowing the lawn and break your neck and die. Once that clock hits zero, you are done. All those things you're worried about and you're consumed about and seem so important to you, they're not a concern for you anymore. Somebody else will take care of the big project at work that was so important that in really the big scheme of things, it's nothing. It's nothing. Nobody's going to remember a year from now, man, Jim finished that big project for the company and made the company $4 million before he died. I sure am proud of Jim. Of course, now he's in the ground. But hey, we sent a nice bouquet of flowers to his funeral. Company made $4 million thanks to Jim. Hail Jim. Now, nobody's going to do that. Nobody gives a shit. You're dead. And you don't know anyway. You don't know if they paid for your funeral, which they wouldn't, or sent a bouquet of flowers, or just simply cleaned your desk out and threw your shit in the dumpster. Because it doesn't matter. You're dead. It's all meaningless after you're gone. It's so easy to see how if you do nothing, if you just, as somebody, like I said, if you lived hedonistically, just in the moment, you're going to ultimately wind up laying around smoking weed, doing nothing. And it's easy to see how people such as that ruin themselves. It's obvious. It's apparent. That's easy to see. What's more difficult to see is how people who are consumed with more and more and are unable to enjoy their wealth, how this also ruins them. Again, I always stand amazed at rich and powerful people, like the Clintons, for instance. There's never enough money and never enough power to satisfy them. They're never just going to go away and say, you know what, we're done. I've got enough money. I've got enough power. Nobody's ever going to jack with me. I got enough money that it's not like I've got to worry about my retirement. I'm going to go enjoy life. They're incapable of doing that. And it's so easy to look at the guy who's laying there at 30 years old, has no direction in life, smokes weed, smokes weed, eats Cheetos all day and plays video games and baits to porn. And that's his life. It's easy to look at the fool who folds his hands and does nothing. It's easy to look at that person and go, man, he's ruined his life. It's much more difficult to look at the George Soros and say, what do you mean his life is ruined? He's got money. Yeah, and he's not satisfied. He lays awake at night. People like that lay awake at night worried about their money, that somebody's going to try to get it. They sit there and they burn society. George Soros burns society down because they're not able to simply just enjoy their lot in life. Even though they have much. When you don't have much, you look at these people and you're envious and you're like, man, if I had that kind of money. Yeah, because you have that view because you're able to enjoy your life with what little you have. And you equate, if I had more, I would enjoy life more. And we're warned here in the scripture, that's not necessarily the case. Look at these people who are uber wealthy and they're unable to enjoy their life because they get that it's never enough. It's never enough. It's so hard to see those people as ruined as much as the guy who just lives on the couch smoking weed and watching porn all day. It's hard for us to grasp and understand that wealthy person who's unable to enjoy his wealth because he's consumed by it, his life is just as ruined as the fool who does nothing. They're the extremes. They ruin themselves at a different level of the extreme. Better one handful, we're told here, we've already covered this, better one handful with peace and tranquility. You don't want to be the fool laying on the couch doing nothing. You can't sit here and just, you know, live in the moment to the extent that you don't do anything moving forward. You don't do anything trying to better your life. You don't try to have any purpose in life. You can't ruin yourself that way. But at the same time, being consumed by wealth and greed also leads to destruction. Again, this is going to be a fun series as we continue to go through it. And we've just kind of started, to be honest. And again, we may pick up next week. It may skip a week. We're going to get all the way through Ecclesiastes because I really think it's beneficial. It really, like I say, I always call it the meaning. That's why I call this the Meaning of Life series, because it really, I think, is about finding peace with your lot in this world, with your place in this world, whatever spot God has put you in. Finding a way. We're always striving for more, and that's good. We should. We should strive to better ourselves. We should strive to better our place in life. But you have to understand, you have to do that, you've got to find a way to be happy, to be content with where you are now. It's fine to want more, but you miss now. If you're so focused on the next thing, on if I just do this, if I just do that, if I can just get a hold of this, if I can just accomplish this, then you miss what you could be enjoying right now. Tomorrow may bring a disaster. Next week may bring a disaster. But it's not tomorrow yet. It's not next week yet. And we're not promised any of our days. Find a way to be content with where you're at now. It's fine to strive for more. We should strive for more. But you have to start from a place of being content where you're at right now. We're going to wrap up on this note. Looks like we're probably going a little long here this week. So we're going to wrap up. And again, we'll probably take up this series next week. We'll see. We'll see where we go from there. So either way, we will get all the way through this. Again, thank you to those who are paying those tithes, who are helping support what we're doing here. If you want to be a part of that, it is much appreciated. The information's at the bottom of the show description. I'm going to sit here and rattle it off because you wouldn't sit here and write it down. Anyway, you would just look at the show description to get that information. So again, it is much appreciated. I also wanted to take just a minute and say I really appreciate those of you who pray for Grandpa Lampshade, who pray for what I'm doing for me personally. I'm of the mind that our prayers for other people, and by the way, I pray for y'all too, but our prayers for other people are actually more effective than praying for ourselves. I really am starting to come to a mind of that, because it's very difficult to pray for yourself and not have it be a certain element of selfishness in there, self-centeredness in there, because you just... just because you're praying for yourself, even though it may be an honest prayer. I'm not saying it's wrong to pray for yourself, but it's very difficult to do that and not have a certain selfishness, self-centered aspect to it, because just for the simple fact you're praying for yourself. Thus, I think our prayers for other people tend to be more effective when we pray for others, because it eliminates any sort of selfish factor from that, because we're praying for somebody else. So I just wanted to take a minute and thank those of you who pray for me, because believe me, I struggle just like the rest of you. You may think, Reverend Lampshade, boy, I struggle in my faith. Trust me, I do. I struggle in my faith just like the rest of you. And in turn, like I say, I pray for all of the remnant of Christianity. I pray for all of you as well. And I think this is a good thing. We'll wrap up on that note. Again, I really appreciate y'all stopping by for the visit, for the sermon this week. We plan to be back next week. Also, a reminder, you can catch another Shut the Lampshade on the Friday edition of the Daily Nationalist Show along with Sven Longshades. It's a fun discussion. So, yeah, you want to be sure and catch that as well. Again, thank you for joining us this week. You know where to catch us next week. That's right, right here in Radio Arion for the Church of the Lampshade with Grandpa Lampshade.